Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Investing Club. It is a good day. We got Frank Shaw with us from California, same state. I rarely have guests on who are in the same state that I'm in. So today's a good day. We got Frank, and Frank knows a lot about underwriting. It is the most important. I guess you can't really say the most important because they're all important, but underwriting is an extremely important skill to develop. Because if you buy wrong, there's no fixing it in your operations. If you didn't buy it at the right price, then you're kind of screwed. And Frank's master skill is knowing what the right price is. He is an LP in 696 doors, I believe. Frank, is that 696? What's that unit about?
Yeah, around 700.
700 doors, awesome.
Yeah,
and he's from Daytona Capital. So, and he understands AI for real estate, which is a big topic coming up here since AI is dominating the newsreel. So, Frank, I'm excited to jump into this. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Gabe.
Yeah, for sure. I told you before we got on here, we always like to start with stories. So take us to the story that you have for how'd you get started in real estate?
Yeah, so two main reasons of me studying with real estate. Number one, I'm a Chinese. Real estate is a very common concept in China. A lot of people invest in real estate. They make
really
a lot
of... It's almost cultural, right?
Yes, it's a big culture. So my family actually is benefiting a lot from the real estate over the past 10 years. They probably 10x their asset over the past few years. So I've been influenced of buying physical assets for many years. So this is how I decided, okay, when I make money. I used to work in a tech company before when I first started. So I save every single penny of my money and we put it into the real estate. Most of my money into real estate. We started with single families, condos, and then moving into multifamilies because we maximize our debt to income ratio. We maximize our mortgages. So we cannot really scale buying one home, one door at a time.
Yeah.
Later, we transitioned into multifamily because we realized this is a bigger space. You can deploy your money more efficiently. So this is how I currently end up with real estate. Right now, I am pretty much full-time on just investing, using my own money and my friends' money. And I spend a lot of time vetting deals, vetting GPs, general partners. So that's what I'm currently doing. I mean, right now it's kind of awkward season because there's no deals on the market. So I'm kind of not doing a lot of things.
Yeah, those damn interest rates. Cool, man. And so I understand you've written an AI tool to help people underwrite real estate. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I used to work at a tech company called Opendoor. Opendoor specialty is iBuying for single families in secondary and treasury market. Mainly focused on the 200 to 500K per door. So we basically, I'm a software engineer and also I'm a data scientist. So I know a lot of machine learning, I know a lot of AI. So we actually build up the tool that helps to give a price for every single door, give a price for every single home in the United States between 200 to 500K. But that's more focused on the single family side because single family pricing is slightly different from multifamily. Mm-hmm. Single family pricing is more comp-based driven, right? Technically, two identical homes in the same neighborhood should have same value versus multifamily is very operational cash flow, net operating income based.
Yeah.
So there's a slight difference, but the concept is the same as you use history, you use past data, you use comps to identify how much should a home value.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish. So I'm on the commercial side. We do self-storage, mobile home RV. And I wish there was, you know, that all that data was public. When a property sells, if the P&L was just put out there for a public database to use, that would be super useful because then you could do things like AI learning and create a good comp for a good price for an asset that you're looking at.
I think that's the next step for CoStar because they pretty much have all of the data. They're just not trying to use AI to, they just, I mean, they make enough money by selling reports.
Yeah. CoStar is sitting on a gold mine for sure. So yeah, let's underwriting, that is your bread and butter. That's that is what you're best at. So let's talk about underwriting. And for everybody, I mean, if you guys are coming from the single family realm, underwriting, basically it's just making sure a deal meets the criteria and cash flows and, you know, meets the investing criteria that you're trying to meet. And so it's not, you know, it's, when I first got into real estate, I didn't understand what underwriting was, but it's not that hard of a term.
It's a very fancy term.
Yeah.
It's basically just due diligence.
Yeah. It's just due diligence, just analysis. That's what underwriting is. So you do underwriting for multifamily. When you start, take us through your underwriting process. What is it that you do? Give me a step-by-step basis on what you look for, how you gather the data, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, it's a very loaded question. I do underwriting different from, like, it's not different. Like, my workflow is pretty easy because I'm not an operator, meaning that I don't usually need to build up connections with brokers or I have to find deals out online, right? So I usually get deals from GPs who already filtered or who already make their initial offers to be accepted. So most of the offers that ended up into my plate has been already filtered twice, probably.
Okay. So there are already at least some people think they're good deals.
Yeah. So these deals are what other people think they can make 15% IRR plus a year. So my thesis is try to prove it wrong. So that's my rule number one. I'm trying to prove it wrong. If I cannot prove it wrong, okay, it's a good deal.
Yeah, right.
So my goal is basically trying to poke holes, right? Yep. So So there's a few things to look up. Number one is basically you obviously need to have their offering memorandums, right? OMs, having their T12 cash flow, have their net operating incomes, etc., and also rent rolls, right? These are just the basic materials. Coming from
that's worth repeating because when you're especially if you're on the commercial side, those are the documents that sometimes sellers will say they don't have them or they don't want to give them. You just push back. You need your P&L. You need a seller's not going to have an OM, but you need your P&L and you need the rent roll. Those are like two super important documents. And when a seller says that they don't want to give them to you, that's bullshit.
That means no deals. So these are basically like what seller thinks the data, right? So these are basically data. So I also look at CoStar reports. That's pretty much the three, like four things I look at the most. Like I think,
what do you look for on CoStar?
Yeah, so CoStar basically tells you the comps for rent and also tells you the cap rate. I think these are the two most important things. You also try to understand the market if you don't know the market enough, right? Because I mainly invest in Dallas, Fort Worth, this kind of regions.
Yeah.
So if there's this new region that I've never looked at the deals, CoStar Reports tells you, hey, what's the area look like, right? What's the supply demand demographics of this area look like? Mm-hmm. But after you underwrite enough deals, you kind of just skip that session. Yeah. So you mainly focus on, okay, so to step back, I mainly invest in Class B, Class C value add, right? So a majority of how these deals makes money is by renovating some part of the apartment and trying to bump the rent. Mm. So I need to understand how much can I really bump the rent?
Yeah.
And that's by looking at the comps, right? So CoStar gives you a good understanding of what is your current rent look like. Basically, it will give you like maybe 10 comps and tells you what is your rent currently at. If your rent is already high, the chances it can go higher is very low, right? So CoStar gave me a good idea of, okay, what's the other neighborhoods look like? And then probably
For people out there, you know, CoStar is, you know, it is the best platform to use. It's also really expensive and a lot of people can't afford to, you know, a lot of new investors can't afford to get a subscription to CoStar. Do you have a recommendation for a second tool that somebody could use on the build side?
I usually just ask Realtor to give it to me. They're always willing to. Yeah, it's CoStar is very easy to get. Like, for example, for investors who are new, if they're invested with somebody, that person should be able to provide CoStar. If they are buying from a broker, the broker should be able to provide CoStar. So CoStar technically is free.
Sorry, I jumped in.
That's like a pro tip. But yeah. Technically, they are not allowed to distribute, but everybody distributes.
Right.
Okay, so CoStar and RentPro, that tells me a good story of 90% or 80 to 90% of the situations. Most of the deals we rejected is based on these three things, right?
And so
it's either
a deal generally because they're projecting a rent number that exceeds what you think that is reasonable for the area.
Yeah. Basically, like they either underwrite using a super aggressive small cap rate, they underwrite using a super aggressive rent bump, they underwrite with a super aggressive renovated rent increase, or they underwrite with a super aggressive non-rental income. For example, like Amazon lockers, Wi-Fi, reserve parking, etc.
Yeah.
So 90% of the deals I rejected is just by looking at these, right? For the remaining of the 10%, I usually have to do, that's not saying I reject 100%. I'm just looking at 100% of the deals that I rejected. 90% of these deals can be rejected by looking at this report.
Right. Yep.
I'm not trying to say that they are wrong. It's just like their assumption doesn't fit my philosophies because I have huge skin in the game.
Yeah.
I deploy with my own money versus most of the GP. They tend to monetize based on acquisition fee nowadays. So one thing I pay a lot of attention is how these GPs align their interest, right? So, but that's a separate thing. So underwriting 90% of the deals is basically document. The other 10% or even sometimes 20%, I have to underwrite using two more aspects. Number one is a field trip. Number two is trying to know the GPs.
Yeah.
So the field trip I usually just look at is the property really what I like. I usually don't invest in too old properties or property that require a lot of maintenance unless the GP's teams are great.
Yeah.
They've done it, but most of the time they're not. So I tend to don't invest property that's been too old or 1960s, 1950s. And then I also underwrite the GPs themselves. For example, I try to see, hey, can you, like, what's your track record, right? How many deals are you currently investing? Who's, like, how many hours a week do you actually spend on managing these properties, or you're just 100% dedicated to the property management? Right. Can you show me a few deals that you underwrote in the past 3 to 5 years, and what is your current performance? So this basically tells me a pretty comprehensive story of who's the person who's driving, like the driver, right? How good the driver is, how good the vehicle is, and I personally vet it. So that's pretty much a good sign of a good deals. Yeah. And yeah.
So what is the return that you, what's the, do you go IRR or cash on cash? Like what's the return that you look for?
Yeah. So I personally use IRR a lot because that's time sensitive. Hmm. I usually look for 14% plus IRR to the LPs.
Okay. And that's, okay. 14%, because you're in Dallas, Fort Worth. That makes sense. And I assume you're looking at bigger deals because 14%.
Yeah.
Is decent. It's not a great IRR though. So you're probably only looking at, 100, 200 unit.
Yeah. Because I think this is my bread and butter, meaning that as an investor who wants to be pretty passive, I think being an LP and capital raiser is pretty passive because my job is done after the deal is being underwritten, right? I don't expect to make, because risk and reward always comes hand in hand. I personally don't think I deserve a higher return unless the deal is like a steal, right? That's a separate story. But most of the time, 99% of the time, the deal is like 14% plus. I mean, that's my underwriting because my underwriting is super conservative, right? Technically, the deal should outperform. But I'm just saying that, okay, I don't want to check all of the box to hit this number. I want to see, okay, if what if I just check one box, I can hit 14%. Then I know that, okay, if I got lucky, two or three box being checked, I can make 15, 20. That's a happier scenario, right? But I'm just trying to say, okay, worst case, I want to hit this. Yeah. Because I have other investment opportunity that can make me 10% risk-free. I can just lend money,
yeah,
right? Why would I not do that versus putting a 5-year lock on my money onto some real estate?
Yeah, makes sense.
So I'm trying to be super rational. Like, I don't think there's free money out there. Like, whoever's pitching you 20, 30%, that comes with a lot of risk.
Yeah. Well, yeah. unless you're in industrial 3 years ago, that's just what it was.
Yes. Because right now there's so many players in the market, and also the interest rate is super high. We don't really expect that much of the return.
No. And that's reasonable. I totally understand. Yeah. So I mean, your business, you're really passionate about underwriting, and you're 100% LP. A lot of people forget that is a strategy that you can do in real estate, is you can just be a passive investor, invest in other people's deals. But it all comes down to finding good GPs. You know, that is a difficult task, because you really have to trust the person that you're putting the money with. You have to trust the deal. You've already talked about the deal. How do you find good GPs? Like, besides underwriting them, how do you actually get in contact with them, reach out to them, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so I think the most important way is you have to go to local events. I fly to Dallas maybe 5-10 times a year to just attend meetups. And there's like two big groups out there in Dallas that's pretty good for people to connect. So I go there. I go to conference too, right? Like Race Fast, Best Ever, Bigger Podcast, sometimes I'll go if it's local. So these are events I usually go and see who's pitching, how good they are. I talk to people, build up rapport, and then move forward. But it's a very long-term process. You have to know them for a while, understand what they do, right? Sign up for their newsletter, ask around for references, and maybe sometimes I will chip in a little bit to see how good they are, and then keep chipping more. So that's usually how I invest. Because I see a lot of what I think one big thing I observe currently is that a lot of people think once they are in this real estate business, they can become financial freedom. That's like very wrong expectation. Real estate to me is just like any other asset class. Mm. It's just a different asset class. If you want financial freedom, it takes time. It's not like tomorrow. Yeah. So you need to be patient and wait for good things to come to you, and then you invest. If you become too hurried, then you're putting yourself on a different, difficult spot, especially when the market is bad.
I think patience is definitely a virtue. I will push back a little bit on that one, and just say that, in my opinion, real estate is the easiest way to reach financial freedom, and the quickest, in my opinion. It's not, you know, it's not 100% easy, but it is. Mm-hmm. There's definitely ways, especially if you're active, to reach that goal. And you know, financial freedom for a lot of people is $5,000 a month, and you can
that makes different things
in real estate. And so, little caveat there. So I just took a peek at the clock. It looks like we have run it down. So it's time to jump into the quick question round. Are you ready?
Of course.
Let's do it. It starts with education. It can be anything. It could be books. It could be your favorite conference that you go to, anything like that. Just give me two recommendations, one for general life wisdom and then one for real estate.
General life wisdom, I look into old Chinese Confucianism.
Oh, nice.
That's timeless.
I've read a few Confucius.
Yes,
I don't know if they were called books.
Yes,
but yeah.
So these are good. Like, basically, the most important concept is to be quote unquote mediocre. Like when I say mediocre, it's not like
the middle path.
Yeah, middle path. It's not like too extreme.
Right.
Yeah, the middle path. Yes, that's the gist. And also real estate. I think I go to conferences a lot. I think talking to people is the best way to know what's going on in the market.
Yep. So what is your, you mentioned a few conferences, they all sounded good. What is your favorite conference to go to?
I like my Dallas investment group that's called Brett Sumrock.
Okay, cool.
But that's pretty pricey. You have to pay a high ticket to be there. But that also filters a lot of noise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And those are the ones that you really get the best connections with when there is a little bit of a gate to get into.
Yeah.
All right. And that moves us on to the next question. This is for your younger self. So let's go back to the Frank who was still working in corporate, doing his job. Go back to him, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
I think focus on making money because real estate is, to me, because I actually aim for a very, like my goal is $1 billion in net worth. So my advice
billion.
To being 1 billion.
B with a B. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So you really need to have enough money to start compounding, to have the compounding work. Yeah. And when you don't have the money, the easiest way to make your first million or first 10 million is by exchanging your time for money. Yeah. So be very good at climbing the corporate ladder until you have enough money to compound.
Yeah.
Don't just compound when you have $10,000 or $100,000. That's not going to get you to your goal.
Yeah,
so that's usually right. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. All right. Next question is about the US. It's a big place, a lot of opportunity out there. Give me the single metro you're most excited about investing in today.
I think I spent on Sunbelt State a lot. Yeah. So that's Florida. I have personally have a lot of townhouse in Florida. I mainly invest multifamily in Dallas because they are closer for me to stop by. I don't want to fly to Florida all the time.
Dallas is great. So if you were to choose one city, would you choose Dallas, Fort Worth?
I will.
Yeah.
Other people will choose Phoenix, but I personally like Dallas better just because I know that region.
I just don't trust that they're always going to have water. I feel like Phoenix is just going to turn into a pillar of sand at one day.
California is also have a water issue.
Yeah. All right. Next question. This you've already mentioned this a little bit. I'm going to ask it anyways. Your favorite way to find good deals? What is it?
I wait for people to send me deals because that filters a lot of noise, even though they are less, but it saves my time.
All right. And this is going to be an interesting question for you since you are 100% limited partner. You only invest in other people's deals. So you kind of see it from the sidelines. The question is, not every deal goes the way that we expect it. Sometimes a wrench is thrown into the mix and it goes a little bit sideways. But in those deals, that's where you learn your biggest lessons and you take them on to the next deals to make them even better. So what was a deal that you invested in that went a little bit sideways? And then what was the lesson you learned from that?
I actually got pretty lucky, to be honest. Like most of the deals, the 700 doors I invested, one exited pretty well. The other two, it's in the progress. I think the lesson I would learn is maybe like right now, don't expect cash flow. Like, because right now, most of the deals, the GPs are trying to protect themselves by keeping the cash instead of distributing it, right? So if you really want like monthly stable payout right now, like I'm talking about 2024, real estate might not be the best time to look for cash returns, like on an annual basis for multifamily. It could be for storage, but for multifamily right now, just looking on cash is hard. But if you want capital gain, it's still a good place to park. If you want interest rate, maybe bond is better. That's like the short-term lesson I learned.
And I will say that is the right decision on the GP side to kind of hold that cash because you never know when something could go wrong in a deal and that's when you'll need the cash. But you're right. Not all the, you know, a lot of real estate deals, the cash flow isn't going to be superb. And so you're really going to be benefiting on the sale.
Yeah.
All right. And that leads us to the very last question. This is for the listeners. I'm sure people want to reach out, get in contact with you. It's a two-part question. How can they reach out to you? And then what can they expect when they do?
Yeah. So I am currently super active on LinkedIn. I post daily on LinkedIn. I talk about corporate, like how to climb faster on corporate in tech industry. Mm-hmm. I talk about personal growth. I talk about wealth creation in general.
Awesome.
And my LinkedIn handle is Frank the Tank CFA.
Awesome. Frank the Tank CFA. I will put that link in the show notes. If y'all want to reach out, just click the little more in the description and that'll pull down the full description. And in there, you can find his link.
Yeah. And I don't sell any courses.
No courses sold here. It's just pure info. I love it.
Yeah.
All right, Frank. Well, I appreciate you hopping on the show.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Gabe.
Absolutely. For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. So if you guys have any questions whatsoever, reach out to me, Gabe, at therealestateinvestingclub.com. If you guys want to support the show, just give us a like, subscribe, share, all that jazz. Other than that, I hope you guys have a great week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form. Fill that out and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.